All right, welcome in to Longhorn Live Stream Sunday night. I've got CJ Vogel, who was at the camp yesterday, the June 1st Elite Camp, where Longhorns, future Longhorns, and we think quite a few of them may have been in attendance. Texas doling out 15 new scholarship offers in a really like a 6-hour time frame. CJ, it was rapid fire for a little bit. Rod Babers also with us. What's going on this weekend for Rod B? He's going to talk a little Longhorn football with us. Brought to you by our friend Joe Brown, veteran mortgage pro over at Southside Bank. We'll talk about him a little bit later. CJ, I want to start with you, buddy. 15 new offers, 10 in the class of 2026, 4 in the class of 2027, and then we also had one to start the day, class of 2025, a defensive back. Give us your thoughts on the day as a whole and talk a little bit about those offers.
Yeah, it was really, really impressive day for the coaching staff. We heard a lot of great remarks in terms of how these guys went about the camp and how they were able to, kind of get their hands on some of these prospects and coach them up a little bit, whether it be Terry Joseph, Johnny Nance, and Chris Jackson, Tashard Choice. We heard about them all, and these guys really left a lasting impression with a number of really, really talented, 26 and 27 prospects. Of course, 15 offers, 14 of them coming from the camp. I'll start with two of them, 2027 quarterbacks, Peyton Houston out of Shreveport, Louisiana, and Brady Edmonds out of Huntington Beach, California. Two really, really talented arms. It might not have to wait all too long to figure out where Texas is going in the 27 class. Those might be the two guys at the top of the list as well. So those really, really stood out to me. Brady Edmonds might actually have been the quarterback I heard the most about leaving this camp when it comes to wide receivers. You know, we talked to JV and Martin as well, the tight end. Sounds to me like he shined a lot and impressed the Texas staff, clearly leaving with an offer in hand. So really talented kids there. Other ones I wanted to mention, of course, getting Kosi Okpala and KJ Ford on campus, two front seven defensive players. Great start for the Texas staff there. And, of course, the offensive lineman headlined by John Turrentine. He had a really, really positive things to say about his time, his relationship with Kyle Flood, and, of course, where Texas is sitting early on in his recruitment.
All right, we got a lot of stuff to cover today. Longhorns lost a baseball game today. Actually got blown out by Louisiana, 10-1, I think was the final, after losing a heartbreaker in 11 innings yesterday, 4-2 to the Aggies over in College Station. Texas now eliminated from baseball, and we are hearing some things could be afoot as far as the head of the baseball leadership situation is. We don't have anything firmed up yet, but fellas, the Longhorns fell short and didn't really look good doing it. And so that's never a good sign. And we will see what that means for David Pierce's future as the Longhorns skipper in baseball. The women's rowing team, however, had a completely different day. Light the tower, Rod. You know how it is. They won the national championship. That most likely, I don't want to say it clinches the Director's Cup, but it certainly makes Texas look really, really good in for the potential of the Director's Cup. We're going to have Brett Wilkinson on, the guy that covers the Director's Cup and tallies that up. We'll have him up on Wednesday when he has more clarity from the baseball tournament, et cetera. About what the points mean as it relates to Texas versus Stanford and the overall Director's Cup, which interesting. Stanford finished second in women's rowing, by the way. So it's been back and forth with these two programs overall for the entire Director's Cup. Then also women's softball, they've yet to be scored against in the College World Series for women. They beat Stanford 4-0, then run-ruled Florida yesterday 10-0. So overall, other than the baseball team, it's been a pretty good weekend for Longhorn sports, from recruiting to actually on the field or on the diamond play or in the water. What do you say there? On the lake? I mean, I don't even know.
Another term.
Baseball diamond, right?
Yeah.
A football field, a basketball court. What do you call the place of the on the rowing what? I don't know.
On the pond.
That's good. I like that. That's good, CJ. On the pond. That's good.
Rod, we're going to take questions also. One of the big questions, CJ and Rod, that was going into the day was whether or not Steve Sarkisian was going to prefer Dia Bell, the quarterback out of Hialeah American Heritage, the 2026 quarterback, or Troy Hune, young man out of San Marcos, California, down in the Orange County area, a little bit closer to San Diego almost, which one he would prefer, or if it would be somebody else that would jump off the stat page. Coming out of it right now, they are Jerry Hamilton reporting on OnTexasFootball.com that as of right now, Sark has told both quarterbacks he would take potentially two. And if they want to be a part of a two quarterback class, they're more than welcome to, but he has offers out to both right now. However, we're hearing PFL may have had the better day on Saturday. So that's what Jerry Hamilton reporting right now. We know there've been people that put in crystal ball picks for Torrey Hune. However, he's still got visits and he says he's going to still take them to Penn State, Michigan, Auburn, and Clemson. And then you have Dia Bell, who still has visits set to Florida State this coming weekend, Ohio State, and then LSU as well. We'll see exactly where all this goes and talk a little bit more about that. We're going to take your questions, talk a little bit about just about everything. Rod B is going to have some comments on this quarterback situation because he actually watched both of them. I want to get his take on it. Before we get there, I want to say special thanks to our sponsor, Joe Brown, your veteran mortgage professional. Joe has been providing mortgages in Austin and around Texas for more than three decades. In fact, he was the mortgage broker for me way back in the day, 25 plus years ago, my first ever home purchase. Just a great all-around guy and someone you can trust. Joe's also a proud Navy veteran and a devout Longhorn fan, specializes in the VA loans as well. If you're a former Navy or Army veteran, Armed Forces veteran, give him a call, 512-663-4744. That's 512-663-4744. If you're looking for a mortgage, Joe's someone you can trust. All right, Rod, I asked you about the two quarterbacks. You took a look at them. What do you see from those two guys that you like, or what do you think their strengths are as Sark is trying to evaluate them?
If I'm looking at a quarterback, I kind of look at them and try to evaluate them from a DB's perspective because, you know, I want to know how they could, as a DB, how they would hurt me and what their strengths are and what I need to watch out for. If you're looking at Dia Bell, to me, and I have my notes right here on it, when I watch him, he throws really well on the run. I mean, he can throw the ball on a line accurately on the run, shows you his athleticism. He also is his second reaction ability, his second reaction plays as a quarterback are probably part, in my opinion, part of his strength. That would be part of his X-Man ability, something he does as well, if not better than everybody else. When the play breaks down or his initial read is not there or he's, you know, into his progression, the pressure gets there. He is great once he has to operate outside of the structure of the play or off schedule. And he's great. I think this is why Sark likes him. Sark doesn't like quarterbacks that just scramble outside the pocket. That's not really his thing. He mocks those quarterbacks, actually. And he's not really about the quarterback run game. He mocks that as well, usually. But he likes a quarterback that will extend the play to throw. And Dia Bell does that. That's part of the maturity in his game. When he extends a play from his second reaction, he's not trying to run, and there are yards there to be had. He wants to get deeper into the progression or get into the scramble drill, whichever one it is. And he does it, and then that adds to his other X-Man ability, which is he's really accurate and has a really strong arm throwing the football on the run. And he can get on the run and still make some of those really good throws. So that's what I like about his game. I think Sark likes that about his game, too. And there's a lot of upside there with him. And, you know, he's an old soul, right? His dad played NBA basketball, so he's an old soul in the house with a professional athlete, which means he knows the commitment, the dedication. That's also something Sark likes, right? Arch Manning knows that as well. You like quarterbacks who understand, hey, man, the dedication and commitment that it takes, the investment that it takes to be great at something. And he does. Not saying Troy Hune does not. Troy Hune, what I like about his game, I mean, he's big and tall, 6'4", 205. He looks it. He's big and posing in the pocket. I think he's got a really quick release, and I love his ball placement. I put that down as two things I think are, for him, I mean, X-Man ability. He's got a quick release, streamlined throwing motion, and he's got a strong arm, and he's got a cannon. And so for him, you know, he likes operating in the pocket. He almost looks like he understands the pocket science, where he understands how his footwork is timed up with, aligned with the timing and the depth of the receivers and the routes. I mean, he really loves to operate from the pocket as much as he can. That's what Sark's appreciate about his game. He's got quick hands operating the RPO game. Sark talks about the two physical qualities he looks for: accuracy, quick hands. He's got a deception-based passing game. So play action pass, the RPO, sleight of hand is big in Sark's offense when it comes to the quarterbacks. And that's something Trey Hume does really well too. So, I mean, I can see why he likes both of those guys. The intangibles, the immeasurables, the competitiveness. Sark talks about competitiveness and leadership are the other two immeasurables, the intangibles he looks for in quarterback. And that's something that the film really doesn't tell you. I don't get that just from the film. You gotta really know the young man. You gotta know the coaches, the situation, circumstance to really identify if those traits are at the standard that as a coach you want them at.
All right, we're gonna get to everybody's questions here a little bit, but first I want to say, I think we're all a little envious of this person, Ricardo Tavazan. Good afternoon from Puerto Vallarta.
Hey.
I think we would all like to be in Puerto Vallarta having a little margarita tonight. But, hey, you know what it is. Actually, I think I know somebody that may have had a better day, and that is Longhorn kicker Bert Auburn. This video, courtesy University of Texas Twitter feed. Watch this, guys. This is good stuff here from Steve Sarkisian.
The work ethic. They go through the same grind the soft scholarship guys go on all summer long. So when we can reward those guys, man, there's nothing better. Bert Auburn, you're on scholarship.
Bert Auburn is now a scholarship kicker. We've talked about that for a long time. But look at this. The hair is still there, guys. Probably the most – I know Quinn is the guy that everybody knows. He's on the cover of the EA Sports game. But let's be clear. He may be the most recognizable Longhorn right now because of the hair.
You guys are all like a family to me.
Wow.
Couldn't be more excited to get to work this summer with y'all. Okay.
Bert Auburn on scholarship. Good stuff, Rod.
Well,
Rod, you get in one of those meeting rooms when a non-scholarship player earns a scholarship? What's the feeling and the camaraderie that high when that kind of stuff happens? What are y'all feeling internally when that stuff goes on?
It's really rewarding because you watch those guys' journey, right? You watch their struggle. The walk-ons have it really tough. I mean, those guys, they do the same work everybody else does, but they're not necessarily on scholarship. Those guys, a lot of those guys have jobs and internships and other stuff they're doing. And it's really, for me, I always say I thought LHN should did a walk-on like documentary show, just kind of following one walk-on through their life and practice and stuff like that, because it's really interesting. But yeah, I mean, we had my man Richard Hightower is probably one of the great stories for us, who earned at Peanut, who now works in the NFL. He's actually the Chicago Bears special teams coach now. And he was one of those great stories. Guy just kind of earned it on special teams, earned his respect on the practice field from all of his teammates, and then ultimately earned a scholarship. Man, that's like being a free agent in the NFL. That's the hardest road possible to get a scholarship. Ain't no tougher road than walking on at football. Now, I'm sure you can walk on some other programs, and it's really tough too. Man, football, money talks. And in terms of generating revenue, no sports generate more revenue than football. So scholarships, man, those are gold, baby. I don't know if there's anything more valuable than a football scholarship. And Bert Auburn, no doubt he earned it. So I'm happy for him. And we've been talking about NIL and how, they have now NIL resources that can potentially supplement if you don't have a scholarship. So I'm sure it wasn't this was about more the symbolism of it, the principle. I'm sure that he's got NIL opportunities. I'm sure Bert Auburn was all right. He wasn't struggling like, walk-ons, living, that kind of thing. But still, I think to say that he's earned it, and I think that's more about what it's about. His teammates understand, hey, man, game's on the line. We trust you. You're our guy. And I think this is more about Sark saying, hey, the team has accepted you as a member that has earned their place, and he's earned his place on the team. Yeah.
Matt, let's play that one more time so people can watch that one more time, if you don't mind. In one second, Matt's going to cue that up. real quick. The other thing that I would say, in what I know for to be true, Rod, is a year ago, Bert Auburn actually made more in NIL than his actual scholarship would have been.
Wow.
So think about that. So yeah, that was something that the Longhorns, that the Texas One Fund did. Here's again the moment, just I guess about an hour or so ago. Is that right, CJ? The guys are back for
about 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, summer workouts. Here's Steve Sarkisian again with just great stuff here from the Texas video department.
The work ethic. They go through the same grind the soft scholarship guys go on all summer long. So when we can reward those guys, man, there's nothing better. Bert Auburn, you're on scholarship.
Good stuff, man. That's good stuff.
Look how happy the guys are for him.
I know. That's the whole issue, dude. That's what college football is. Yeah. Jeff Banks. Yeah. Give him a little dap there. There we go.
Love all you guys. You guys are all like a family to me. Couldn't be more excited to get to work this summer with y'all.
Yeah.
There we go, yeah, man.
And it also proves it's a meritocracy, right? It's a meritocracy, man. You can earn it. Earn your place, earn playing time, earn it all. And scholarship included. So I love them. I love those kind of stories, man. But there are some other guys who are probably deserving of it too. I love when Taff Daddy was one of those guys too. I mean, every year, I don't know how many they do every year, but I love when I see those stories from any university. I know Texas, it brings extra kind of chills, but I love it from any university. Honestly, those are some of the best stories in college football. They really are. And this is why Sark was upset about the walk-on thing. Right? In the new era of college football, there's one of the big topics of conversation is the roster size, and that there may now be, we don't actually know how the framework is going to look, but there may be a situation where you may not have walk-ons in the future. And you don't have these stories. These really cool. I mean, these are some of the best stories in college football. So congrats to Bert Auburn. Congrats. That's fantastic. Good for him.
Yeah. Also worth mentioning, no kicker in the country made more field goals than Bert Auburn a year ago. So he certainly earned that scholarship. Again, Rod, I like what you had to say there. I mean, this is one of the best moments of the calendar year for college football. When these guys, whether it be at practice or spring ball or beginning summer conditioning, you get these videos and, you get to see the joy and kind of the relief of I'm on scholarship now. I think it's one of the best parts that college football has going for it. And I hope it doesn't go away anytime soon.
Yep. I hope not either. I was down in Destin for those meetings, guys, and they were acting like it was a foregone conclusion. And it wasn't the coaches. The coaches were wanting to fight against it. Okay. The athletic directors and the commissioner are saying, hey, something's got to give financially here, you know? And so it wasn't the coaches that were wanting this. They were trying to figure out, hey, how the hell do we coalesce and come together to fight against this or to keep it as many as possible, right?
Yeah.
But administrators were like, look, where are we going to get 22% of our revenue? Football's our number one cost center. Not only does it make the most money, but it's the number one cost center, right? Yeah. And so how do they juggle those two things to make it okay? Hey, a lot of things we're going to talk about. We're going to take everybody's questions, as many as we can. Tonight, we've got not only do we have Bert Auburn getting the scholarship there that we just talked about, Texas baseball lost. There may be some coaching thoughts there that people have. Want to talk about that? Want to talk about the women's rowing team? I don't know how much we know about that, but they did win the national championship today. Congratulations to them. That's 3 of 4 years, by the way, for them. Wow. Dave O'Neill, the coach there, putting together a quite the crew. Oh, yeah. There's my fun holiday. And then softball. Mike White's team is in the semifinals at the very least. They play again tomorrow. I think I don't know exactly who they play yet, but I think that was being decided by stuff today. Go ahead, Rod.
No, I got a question though for you because you know you talked about all the sports that are doing really well. Softball's killing it right now, and rowing. You talked about it. We're excited about Texas football, of course. Texas baseball, I mean, that's the standard, right? It ain't just enough to, you know, be in the postseason for Texas baseball. They are blue blood. So, hey, man, their standard is compete for the championship. And if they're not competing for the championship, there's an issue, which obviously we'll talk about. So here's my question. With Texas embarking on a golden era of Texas sports, what sport at Texas, women or men, will have the next, will have the best 3 years, the best next 3 years, the best next three, right? 3 years. So, because I think all the coaches, well, I don't know, not all the coaches, but most of them will.
Of a major sport, though? Like, well, like no, I would say.
You want to say, you want to just take it to major?
Yeah, like I would say right now, based on what I'm seeing, is, I mean, there's like.
Let's do both. Let's do rowing both. Team. Give me the one overall, and then give me the one that
makes it. I think rowing has won 3 of 4 national championships.
That's true.
Volleyball back to back.
Yeah, volleyball back to back. But volleyball's done that with Madison Skinner and Logan Eggleston. And even though I do think there's some young people in the program at Texas, I don't think there's a Logan Eggleston or a Madison Skinner in volleyball right now on the way up. So there's that. Now, maybe I'm wrong. The one that I think it could be, although with what Dawn Staley's doing at South Carolina, is women's basketball. Because they're playing at a high level. They get Rory Harmon back next year. Plus, they've got Madison Booker, who's clearly one of the most talented players. And then you also have some incoming freshmen, as well as a
are you thinking about the SEC? SEC though with that?
Yes, yes, I know. Okay. I get it. That's what I'm saying. Plus, you have to play a little bit harder brand of ball, maybe.
Yeah.
I feel like women's basketball, of the more major sports, probably the best situated. Now, if you're talking about football, basketball, and baseball and the men's sports, right now I would take football.
I would too.
If you're just taking football, basketball, baseball, men's sports only, I would take football's situation currently.
Yeah. Going back over to the woman's side, I mean, it's hard not to look at the number one team in the country, right? You know, softball's got going pretty well. Coach White's got that thing moving. And we saw, a heck of a performance in the circle from a Kavon, the freshman. I mean, talk about a bright future. You got yourself one right there if you're Mike White. So I like what that program's looking like. Obviously hard not to when you have a number one by your name, but they're certainly making the most of their trip in the Women's College World Series, that's for sure.
Yeah. No, I'm just thinking because they got the SEC, but you also have NIL. Like, all these changes in college football are just going to help Texas. Let's be honest. They're the haves, not the have-nots. So, you know, these sports, like some of them that are already killing it, they could catapult with NIL and in the SEC, depending on, you know, the competition level for that specific sport. So it's interesting. Rowing, volleyball, and softball are the ones. The ladies are the ones getting the love here. Like, they're going to wreck shop, you know, going into the SEC. They're the ones.
Well, men's tennis, what did men's tennis lose in the national championship? Just lost in the national championship to TCU. And then immediately, by the way, went to the portal and got the guy that beat them. I mean, I don't know if you saw this, but TCU won 4-3 over Texas. The guy that clinched it for TCU transferred to Texas the next week.
it's like the reverse of the data. It was crazy.
Yeah.
I didn't see that. That is
he's going to be a Longhorn next year.
Proving my point. I saw all these changes because it'll help Texas. It's like, yeah. That,
I do have a couple other things I want to mention. One thing that we were want to get to real quick, I'm going to list off the players who were offered, the new guys that were offered, just to give you all a sense. 15 in total new football players offered yesterday. From the class of 25, I'm going to start there, and I'm going to ask CJ your take on this one. Nathan Tillman, 6 foot, 185 pounds, safety out of Mansfield Timberview. He started the day off getting offered yesterday morning. He did not attend the camp. This is a guy that Blake Gideon saw and likes at safety. 6 foot, 185, ran a 10.71, 100 meter. Rod, this may be a guy that you need to look at, see what you think as well. CJ, tell folks what you know about Nathan Tillman as of right now in his recruitment.
Yeah, things are still pretty open there, and it's interesting that Texas is going up to the DFW area again, where they've had great success in offering a defensive back. Right now, you look in terms of where things sit at the moment in that defensive back room, you would expect some, you know, some further progression at the moment with where Texas is at the moment. You know, with a number of guys coming in for official visits, will that get to the point for Nathan Tillman? We'll have to, you know, kind of wait and see, of course, but the offer does come in and it does give Texas a number of interest with him as well. Great speed, Bobby. 10.7 is pretty darn quick. I had a coach in the DFW area text me right after and said he might have a future at the linebacker position as well. But, hey, at 10.7, hard not to utilize that speed back deep, specifically if you're able to, diagnose plays and routes in front of you and make a play on the footballs, which he does very well in his tape as well. So I like the offer. It'll all depend on whether or not he's able to get back on campus for an official visit sometime this month.
Yep. Committed to SMU, but open. Also visiting Baylor, I think, next weekend or the weekend after. So Texas trying to get in there. Now the 2026s. And these are guys, CJ, that you saw at some level yesterday. And I'm going to go by position on offense, starting with Mike Brown out of Houston Legacy Sports Science, a good all-around athlete. His high school coach is Michael Bishop, the former Kansas State quarterback, Rod. Just remember that name. Yeah. Jordan Clay, wide receiver out of San Antonio Marshall. And then a young man out of Mansfield, Zion Robinson. When I tell you guys that he can jump, Zion was not only on the state sprint relay team for Mansfield that went to state, but also won the state high jump with a leap of 6'8". I think he's 6'3 or 6'4". He can go up and get it. Those are the receivers that were offered in the 2026 class. Then you had three new offensive linemen to add to a John Turntine. Noah Best out of Midlothian. Felix Ojo, a big left tackle, right tackle prospect out of Mansfield, Lake Ridge, and Nicholas Robertson out of Klein. On the defensive side of the ball, you had Jamarian Carlton, CJ, who you saw just a couple weeks ago up at Temple at edge, and then you saw Dylan Berryman out of Monroe, Louisiana, Wachita. He was offered defensive lineman as well. In the secondary, two guys, all-name team, Booby Brock King out of Port Arthur Memorial is offered, as well as Jamarian Vincent out of Waco Connolly. Those two guys offered in the 2026 class. In 2027, four guys, two of which CJ has already mentioned in this broadcast, Peyton Houston out of Shreveport Evangel Christian and Brady Edmonds, a quarterback out of Huntington Beach. Those two QBs offered, as well as defensive lineman Amari Vickerson out of Cy Ranch and offensive lineman Brian Swanson out of South Oak Cliff. Word on the street is that Brian Swanson may be one of the best players in the country in the 2027 class at this point. So a lot of names there for y'all to look over and think about at this point in time. We're going to get to some questions now, get going on this and have a little fun. So without further ado, let's get it going. CJ, which position does Felix Ojo project to? I mentioned left or right tackle. You have any druthers there? I know John Turntine is going to be a left tackle prospect. Does that mean Ojo necessarily is a right tackle prospect?
I think so, and I think that's kind of where he's been looked at a little bit as well in his recruitment. He's a true 6'7", and I know Texas has utilized some big offensive linemen at the right tackle position in the past. They're expected to do it again this year with Cam Williams. That, to me, looks like the spot if you look ahead in the 2026 recruiting cycle, specifically in the state of Texas and where Texas is kind of projecting some of these offensive linemen right now. Of course, Turntine is your left tackle. He is your five-star guy. Who else adds to that room and is in that class? Well, Ojo is certainly a guy who likes Texas, likes Kyle Flood, was ecstatic whenever he got the offer as well yesterday. Right tackle to me looks like the spot if he was to consider Texas in big picture-wise for his recruitment.
Gotcha. This one coming in super chat. Thank you, Jason Himlinski. Bobby, what do we do with David Pierce, the Texas baseball coach? He's had some success. What has he been to Omaha, three times? But program is on a downward trend, and Aggie is ascending. Worst pitching staff in my lifetime. Aggie. And I think I got to be honest. He's not wrong. I don't think Jason's wrong about the pitching staff. And that is even more of the problem that people are pointing to, because Pierce made the unilateral decision to go be the pitching coach himself this year, right? And take it away from somebody. And then for that to fall flat is a big question mark, right? And so I think Chris Del Conte has a decision to make here. I don't know what it's going to be, but, there's some names out there. There's a guy at Dallas Baptist, the guy at Clemson, some other coaches as well that are all possibilities. But let's see what Chris Del Conte decides here The question you have is, it's well put by Jason. He decided to take on the pitching staff himself, and it didn't work. And at the same time, Schlossnagel at A&M looks like he's building something special in Aggieland right now. CJ, I know you're a baseball fanatic. What do you think of the baseball situation right now?
Yeah, it's not an easy one, right? You know, you expect to make it to Omaha at the University of Texas. So when you fall flat and you kind of see, the trajectory over the last couple of seasons, it, raises the question of whether or not it's the perfect fit. I know Texas fans are very passionate with their approach to baseball because, again, they expect to make it to Omaha and be winning these regionals, be hosting these regionals, and be in contention to host Supers, right? That's kind of the expectation down here in Austin. So especially going into the SEC, where baseball is, right there with football almost in terms of national success. You talk about it. We won't have to talk about the Omahawks because that's not a thing. But Vanderbilt's had their success. Florida, Georgia, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, all of them have had big-time success in the past decade or so. Texas now entering that conference, you're going to have a guy that can go toe-to-toe all the way through. So I'm not sure if with where things sit right now, if Pierce is going to be best suited for the job going into 2025, it just makes, with this pitching situation and with the way that we've seen it kind of decline over the last couple of seasons, it's not encouraging. You haven't had a shutdown number one bullpen guy for almost his entire tenure. And I think that's very, very, bleak. If you look at it from a big picture perspective, you're expected to have big arms, big powerful arms. And I know Texas is fighting that MLB draft every cycle when it comes to their top prospects. But at the same time, you put together a pretty good lineup. You led the conference in home runs. At that point, you should be good, right? If you're hitting dingers more than anybody else, that's runs on the board. Not holding on to those leads, not being able to compete with those big early preseason tournaments, it's almost to the point where it's embarrassing, Bobby, where you go out and you play at Texas Ranger Stadium every season to open it up, and you're coming back with an 0-4 record and looking uncompetitive. I know he got a little bit of bad injury luck with Tanner Witt, a guy that you expected to be an All-American, but at some point you have to adjust. We didn't see much of a development with LeBaron Johnson this year. He was expected to be your number one, and by the end of the season, you're sitting there thinking, oh, he's on the mound. We better score 10. And that's not what you can have heading into the SEC. So I think change is due. And I think going into the SEC, you have to look at, kind of getting with maybe a little bit youthful, kind of more energy in that room.
Interesting. This one from Robert Pope. Bobby, CJ, and Rod, would you prefer a day or night game versus Georgia? Thinking night with new lights, drones, fireworks, etc., adds to advantage. I don't know how much drones, fireworks, and lights add to the advantage, but a well-lubricated crowd tends to be pretty loud. That would be the thing. But, Rod, yeah. I'm looking to you a little bit here because you've actually played under the lights at DKR. Is it an advantage versus, say, an 11 o'clock or 2:30 kick to play at night?
I'm gonna say yes, because I agree with your point, number one, the build-up for the game. You'll be at, obviously if it's at home with Georgia, right? You'll be in comfortable circumstances. You'll be at home. You'll be in a more of a controlled environment than your opponent will. So the longer you can keep them in it, the better. And I agree with the light show and the drone show. I don't know. This won't affect Georgia because Georgia's been in the biggest games in college football the last few years. So no game is too big for Georgia. So we're talking about a very small, minuscule advantage, if that. But that was in that drone show last year. I don't know if we tracked it analytically, but I remember Texas scoring like right after those drone shows where they did at nighttime. It happened in that. Do you remember, was it the Wyoming game?
Wyoming, very first play, Xavier Worthy took it to the house.
To the house. And I want to say, what was the other game? Was it the Tech game? It was another night game.
It was Keelan Robinson. Keelan Robinson after halftime.
I'm telling you, man, it's like something about the spectacle where the opponent, you just basically discombobulate them. They're just like, whoa, this, look at these drones. This is crazy and wild. So I'm glad you did it against two opponents that they can be taken aback by this spectacle. Georgia won't be. Georgia has seen it all. That's Georgia. So, but I agree. I like the night game thing, though. I'll do it. Make it a night game. The fans will be so damn hyped for the night game. And Chris Del Conte will want to show off. So he'll have the spectacle be as crazy and as wild as you can make it.
I got to say this. A couple of people are saying it should be at night because the F1 race is during the day. That, of course, is that weekend. I just don't – I mean, how many people are going to go to both? I mean, I know people are going to be in town, but how many F1 people are going to be coming to –
got to have a lot of dough for that. That's for sure. Finding a hotel, you got to have a lot of dough for that too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah you do, right? I just don't know if it's going to be the same, but I want to say that. UT boy here with a nice little reminder for all of us. 90 days till go time, fam. Longhorns, Byron Murphy days, number of days to the football season.
I will say this. It's good because Georgia fans won't travel as well because the prices in Austin, as y'all know, them big money prices. They going to the SEC places, a little bit different than going to Austin during F1 weekend to try to get hotels, like CJ said, or to get Airbnb. So that may actually help Texas a little bit more. Fewer fans will travel.
All right, this is a comment here. Here's a comment from Ekim. If Racine Guillory, the running back in 2026 out of Aledo, wants to decommit from Texas, good luck to him. Never should have committed this early. We do not believe he showed up yesterday at the June elite camp for underclassmen. Tre'Darrion Ball from Carthage was there, by the way, and apparently had a good camp as well. What do y'all think about guys committing too early? I mean, because we had Anthony Williams out of Shadow Creek, a linebacker, commit January 1st, and he's already decommitted and committed to another school. What do y'all think about guys committing too early? Did Racine Guillory perhaps commit too early when he's now going to go around and says he might see 6-7 other teams, apparently? What do y'all think?
Yeah. Too early? It's twofold, right? You know, if you're a guy that expects to be a national prospect or a guy that's just starting to get some of these big offers, and you know, it's you have guys in your camp, whether it be high school coaches, trainers, family members, and pitch the idea of, hey, you got to lock up a spot right now. You know, it's a bit political in the world of recruiting, right? You have those moments where maybe I don't know if this offer will be committable down the road. I got to get my spot in a class right now, specifically at a school like Texas, where I know they're going to go out and recruit some of the best players in the country. I got to lock my spot up before they have time to second guess and go find or progress on other relationships and recruitments down the road. Whereas then you have guys, you know, that commit very early and eventually their recruitment takes all the way off. And now they're getting, you know, offers from Alabama, Ohio State, USC, schools where they probably weren't hearing from or at least envisioning them being a part of their recruitment earlier on, thinking, oh, you're telling me they're going to allow me to come take an official visit here? I'm going to go check it out. Maybe I did make my decision too early. So it goes both ways. And I think at times the coaching staffs as well take commitments too early too. You know, they also, it's a two-way street there. They have to say yes as well. So it goes both ways. But I also think that if you do commit very early, it should be taken with a grain of salt, of course. It's a long way to go.
Do you agree with that, Rod? You've been in that seat. What do you think?
CJ nailed it, man. They always say recruiting is about relationships. I actually compare them to romantic relationships, right? Even though it is business, in business you sign contracts. So make you're obligated to, you know, you're obligated in some way, form, or fashion to follow up with whatever your promises are business-wise. But in recruiting, you can make promises all type. Hell, there's a lawsuit going on right now, right, about promises that were made about NIL. You can kind of make all these promises and talk about this stuff. And then none of it really matters until you do actually sign the letter of intent, and boom, there you go. So to me, it kind of reminds me of a relationship. Like, you don't need, I always say, you don't need both people to agree to a breakup. Sorry, all you need is one person, and that's it. Then you're broken up. And it's like, you're always trying to explain to, like, well, breaking up for this reason. Like, but only one person needs to agree to a breakup. And the same thing in recruiting. Only one of them really needs to agree, like, nah, I'm done. I'm moving on. And so I get when CJ's right. Guys are just securing their spot, and then they still want to look around. They want the state, they want their cake and eat it too. Secure your spot, also be able to look around. And I totally, honestly, I understand it. I'm not even mad at them. Don't hate the player, hate the game. It is. It's kind of a, it's one of those, it's a gray area. All right. And my dad told me, I remember in the recruiting, he was like, hey, son, when you're done in the recruiting, I need you to call the coach and tell him you're done. Number one, he was tired of calling the house. He was like, don't call. I don't want him calling the house. When you're done with him, tell him you're done. And so you can narrow down your recruitment. You know what I mean? And I, you don't do that anymore. Now you just kind of keep it open. And, you know, social media, the way recruiting is nationalized, you know, now guys have, you know, different motives. And I totally get it because you got NIL thrown into the mix. So it's different. But, yeah, I mean, I think the guys just want the security of having a spot secured, like CJ said, and then also being able to look around because they do want to look around a little bit. And you want to be courted. It's fun. It's fun being wooed, man. It's fun for coaches to call you and tell you how great you are and try to woo you and impress you. That's a fun process to be recruited, man. You don't want to miss that process because it's only going to happen a few times in your life if you're good enough for it, by the way.
Rod, it used to be a little bit more fun, right? You go on the official visits. You have the gummy bears. You have the flowers, man. Everything. The hotel rooms decked out. You can't do that anymore. You can't put on the jerseys anymore at the visits. I don't know what's going on with the NCAA, but – at least they're cracking down there. But no, to your point, it's fun. Enjoy it. Take the trips. Go see a school. This is the memories and the time that you'll remember the most about before you enter your college days.
Yeah. What's hilarious is Rod B was before cookie cakes. He got Sally Brown's cookies.
No way.
Yeah. I remember from the Angels. Remember the Angels? They don't have Angels anymore either. They used to have it was just Angels, and they were all women, and they were just beautiful ladies. And there were Texas Angels every player. Now this was not crazy. This was not, don't be thinking your mind in the gutter. All right. He was the young ladies who were just helping you on your visit to show you around, that kind of stuff. But they were all beautiful, drop dead gorgeous. So some was going, they were all gorgeous. I don't know, for some reason, I guess the average looking girls didn't apply.
Go to Texas, Arizona State, and Florida State. You'd probably be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Three places.
Yeah. Now they don't have it like that. Now I think they have that. Now it's like it's different. It's different because that was back in my day. But that was actually a benefit back in my day. That was fun. That can help you close some recruitments when you come on campus and the young lady that comes up to you looks like she's an Instagram model, and you go, "Oh, really? Yes, really."
Yeah. You were recruited before Instagram too.
Yes. Oh man, think about that. Exactly. I walked on campus. I was like, "This." What? Oh, I still remember her name. I won't even say it on the jet. I remember her name. She was great. Yeah. Oh, hey, Tom.
Oh, Rod. Yeah. Hey, Texas. This is from David Keith Williams. This brings back memories of my childhood. Texas should play Georgia at night and have a free Big Red soda night. Between Big Red and RC Cola when I was growing up, there are the two. Remember those? RC Cola. Yeah, I don't even – CJ, have you heard of either of those?
I've heard of them.
There you go.
That's about it, though.
You never tried RC Cola?
No. I mean, that you used to see them all the time when I was a kid at, like, the Chuck E. Cheese's, right? But that was the only time. I don't think they even have Chuck E. Cheese's anymore.
you're gonna be like me. You could probably have a grandchild one day that goes to Chuck E. Cheese. I think that they've got those things on lockdown. That's going to be a thing for a while. Hey, yesterday was a huge offer. This is from Jackson Kimball. Yesterday was a huge offer day for UT. UT offered a DL from my alma mater, Wichita Parish, Dylan Berryman. We went through this list earlier. Matt, could you bring that list back up of the new offers? CJ, I want to ask you this question as it relates to all of those offers that went out yesterday. Were there any that really surprised you a bunch out of this group of new offers? Any that you just said, whoa, wait a minute here?
Maybe not. I think a lot of these guys were on the offer list coming in, or that watch list coming in. Jamarion Vincent was a guy I saw earlier at a Temple. Really, really impressive guy. Great wingspan. Has a good motor. I like him as well. Let's see. Oh, Jamarion Carlton. Sorry. Jamarion Vincent's out of Waco Connolly. Defensive back, 6'2", great length, great speed as well. I was put on to him. him about a year and a half ago, and I've seen that recruitment grow. Waco Conley's produced some great defensive backs, and Texas has certainly benefited from that as well. Dylan Berryman, we're speaking about him specifically here. That kid is built incredibly well. He looks like he's got to turn sideways to walk through door frames. He's what you want your interior defensive lineman to look like without pads on, if you catch what I'm saying here. He's a really impressive kid. Jordan Clay, wide receiver out of San Antonio Madison. We talked a little bit to him as well. That offer is going to change the trajectory of his recruitment. He mentioned how important it was. He said he's been fighting to get this offer for the last year and a half. Now that it's here, Texas certainly in the top three for him as well. He was one of the names I heard a lot about in terms of top performers at the camp from the wide receiver position. And Bobby, I know you're a big fan of Zion Robinson out of Mansfield as well. So a really talented wide receiver group. The other wide receiver I wanted to mention, we had a comment about it earlier, is Chris Stewart out of Shadow Creek, 2026 wide receiver. He might be the best wide receiver in the Houston area this year for the 2026 cycle. Getting him back on campus is really important, specifically with A&M having a camp on the same afternoon. It's going to be a big battle between the two schools there. Oklahoma will have a say, and LSU coming back into Houston for big-time playmakers. Expect that to be a big national recruitment as well. I think he's going to be a really, really talented top 50 national kid when it's all said and done.
Got it. Good stuff there, CJ. I do like Zion Robinson a lot. I watched some of his basketball highlights as well when we saw this. Next thing I want to talk about here a little bit, if you give us a chance. I'm trying to find the comment. Here it is. Tom hey. Bregman. Rod B., I found you on Madden 05. You did actually play football at one point in time.
Man.
Our friend Matt has a little favorite for you. Here man. You go.
Look at that. Scores. What are the scores at?
Hey, look at that 5'9". They're being gracious.
Oh, man. I can say they're being now I mentioned that 5'8¾". You can round up. That's 5'9". You can round up to that. 192. Yeah, man. There you go.
Ooh, I love it.
I'm glad that didn't show my scores. My score is probably not great. I see my man Dre Bly's at 91 overall. I like that. Dre Bly was the man. I love my time spent with Dre Bliss.
Yeah, he's looking good, Rod.
I got to say this. Dre Bly was a guy that never tested extremely well.
No.
But you talk about Manny Muhammad in this way a little bit, Rod. And that he sees it a little bit before it happens, and that's why he gets his hand on so many balls.
Yeah.
You think that that's a little – I know that's not a direct comparison, but that's the kind of the forethought you believe that Manny Muhammad has a little bit, right?
It is. It's a little – I think Manny Muhammad right now, you know, I mean, I still think he has a chance to test relatively well. I don't know what Dre Bly ran, so I got to go back and look at it. So I'm not going to say he did test well. But by the time I got to the Detroit Lions with Dre Bly – Dre Bly was – he just was – he had, like, love handles, you know what I mean? Like, he just wasn't built like a – like, you know what I mean? Like a elite athlete at the defensive back position. He wasn't. And he was kind of pudgy, and he wasn't – he didn't have elite speed, but his awareness, his football – he's a coach now. I believe he might be a coach with the Lions, if I'm not mistaken. He's in the league now. Go Google him right now. I don't know where he's coaching at, but he's coaching right now. He's coaching with Mac Brown, actually, at North Carolina for a while. His football IQ and football intelligence, it is among the best I had ever been around in my football career. That guy would break on routes because he would diagnose the route combinations based on his film study and their tendencies and patterns from that specific personnel set. And I watched him cover Randy Moss. There's no reason physically for Dre Bly to be able to cover Randy Moss. It shouldn't be able to, it shouldn't be able to happen. But he would be able to cut him off on certain routes. And because he would be able to read body language really well, but also reading and football investigator. I came up with that term by watching Dre Bly because he would read the clues that the offense was giving him and be able to decipher exactly what play it was going to be. That was amazing because that's the first time I realized that it's not about athleticism at the next level. Some guys are doing it because their football intelligence, football acumen are otherworldly. Like that is their X-Men ability. And that's what I found out about Dre Bly. Yeah, what is he? Where is he right now? Oh, he's with Charlotte. He's with. Is he with Brew?
He is with Brew.
He's with Brew.
I'm guessing Brew may have helped him get that job because Brew was with him at North Carolina as an undergrad, and when he's coming out of college.
Okay, I didn't realize he's okay. I didn't realize that. Yeah, no, but Dre, I'm telling you, Dre Bliss, he's legit football IQ guy. But right, he didn't really have it. Hey, thank you, Kelly. I appreciate that. I'm an old man, right?
Wait, this is even better.
Not a great.
Like a fine wine.
I appreciate that. I moisturize a lot.
Those are things I don't need to know, Rod. Hey, here we go. A couple other questions we want to get to and talk about tonight as well. Let's go and get this one real quick. A question from Ryan Nelson. Talk about why Aledo players disappoint.
Oh,
I don't know that they disappoint altogether, but they certainly, I mean, Jason McClellan was just drafted, by the way. So was he a disappointment in y'all's opinion? I don't know.
My thing with Aledo players, specifically at the running back position, Bobby, is that they're used. I mean, if they're a car, they're putting on 100,000 miles a year, basically. They get the rock, and they run those guys into the ground. But that's the usage, right? That's what you expect, and that's why they're so successful, is because they always have the ball in their best player's hands. But Jonathan Gray dinged up his entire career. Jace McClellan, though drafted, I don't think he had the numbers that we expected coming out of high school at the college level. Racing Guillory, we'll see what happens with him. But again, later in his sophomore season, he was used tremendously down the stretch in those playoff seasons or those playoff games for Aledo. We'll see, of course. It kind of varies player to player to player. But running back specifically, I think a little bit of an overusage. But, hey, it wins games, so.
I was going to say they won the most state championships of anybody in the state of Texas now. And I would add this. I mean, Jonathan Gray was injured. I mean, how do you tear your Achilles and think you're going to be the same running back? How do you have two shoulder surgeries and think you're going to be the same running back? It just doesn't work that way. So that was a bit of that as well. We'll see if that's historically true. Jaden Finley, another big-time prospect, a 2026 wide receiver, tight end type, out of Aledo that Texas is definitely in on as well. So keep that one in there. Cisco Diaz has this question. When a player is considered an athlete, in quotes, does that hurt or help the player? Example, not having a long time playing at one position and having the experience. I love this question, and I'll tell you why. Quandre Diggs didn't have a position.
No.
Okay. But he found one because he was a football player, not just an athlete. I worry about guys that are more athletes that don't have a position because they've been, they're just athletic, not necessarily good football players. So I don't worry too much about Michael Terry, for example, out of San Antonio right now, because he's actually an excellent football player. You just don't know what position he's going to play. The one that is a good example is Jelani McDonald. Okay. He was an okay football player, but a great athlete in high school. Now he's moving back to safety. You don't know if he's going to be a great player at safety. You're waiting. Okay. And so I see that. I understand this. It can hurt, but if you're a great football player and a great athlete, more power to you. That's the Quandre Diggs of the world, in my opinion. The opposites are, look, John Burt was a wide receiver recruit who was a great athlete and ran 4.4 until the cows come home. He could run 4.4. Wasn't necessarily a great receiver because he was never a great football player.
Yeah. No, you're right.
And that's the difference between the term athlete. Is he an athletic football player, or is he just a good athlete?
It's like Schooler, right?
Schooler
was like that.
But he was a good football player.
That's what I'm saying. He was a good football player. And he's still playing football. He's just out there playing football. Special teams, just playing
Adrian
football.
Adrian Phillips was like that. Adrian Phillips was a high school quarterback.
That's a good point.
That's on the flip side. I mean, Tyler Owens, we saw that, you know, that late bump in his recruitment to a five-star, and then you turn the tape on, you're like, wait, this doesn't necessarily line up with what you anticipate, but he was a freak. You know, the measurables, he was a combine, you know, they loved him at the combine because he can test, he can jump, all the measurables. Then you turn the tape on, you say, ooh.
Well, he also thinks the world's flat and that the moon was staged landing, right? There's that. I don't know if they loved him for that one, CJ.
That's a good but theory. Maybe he's not a football investigator, as Robert.
Yeah, he was not a football investigator. He thought it was all handled in Burbank, California, moon landing. Yeah. All right. Next question. I want to go to Justin Yarbrough, if you don't buy it here. Good conversation. Good question there, Cisco. From Justin, thanks for the super chat. How many commits will we have when football season starts? Texas currently at 11. And will we sign more than 24 guys? Because being under the 85 scholarship number, if roster limits stay the same for now. You know, I talked a little bit to coaches off the record and behind the scenes and ADs. They're going to, no matter what the outcome is, they're going to approach this recruiting season as if there's no change to roster. Okay. They may have to go back and do address some of this retroactively a year from now, but they're not going to make schools renege on their offers or anything like that. So don't worry about that changing that fast where it actually would change where a commitment went or what have you. I think 24 is about right, not including the normal stuff that Texas is going to do in the portal. I do think that's about right. CJ?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think with Bert Auburn being put on scholarship this evening, and again, congrats to Bert, I think that number for scholarships at the moment is up to 84. If you consider where things were out of the portal coming out in spring, so Texas still has room. It might be at 83, 84. That's where we were, depending upon where exactly those NIL, you know, scholarships, if you will, were put on from the portal. But that's a good question from Justin. And thank you again for the super chat. Bobby, I wanted to ask you and Rod, get your thoughts here too. If we do see the end of the walk-on programs at schools, you would have to raise the scholarship limit, right? You would, like 90, 95, right? Wouldn't you think? Is that not
I would think that they were talking about 85 being the max, maybe.
Expenses.
Yeah,
they max and roster took like and no one else.
The coaches. I felt like the coaches were told, and this is just me, based on hearing all the coaches talk, all the ADs, Greg Sankey, and all those guys. 85, they felt like might still be gratuitous, as in too many. So they're looking at it. Well, look, you could get it done with 53 in NFL and 16 taxi squad guys.
Ooh.
Why can't you get it done with 69 in college?
See, that's interesting to me because you're pushing for a larger playoff. You're going to play more football games.
And
NFL's playing.
I'm going to add this. Unless you're going to redshirt 9 out of 10, what about if you're going to take 5 offensive linemen in college football? 4 of them are not ready to go.
Right.
Are they going to just have to all go JUCO? Or all go to Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo before they're ready to actually play, before they can transfer into Texas? Otherwise, you're going to have dead weight on the roster.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be rude to offensive linemen. It just takes them longer than any other position, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because their bodies at 17 are not ready to compete with 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds.
Yeah, like, maybe.
Quarterbacks can get away with it, right? Because they can run fast.
Yeah, maybe you always said that, though, in other positions. This is why you need a general manager, right?
Right.
Now you're talking about something. This is what general manager contemplates. All right, maybe we offset that with we got to develop O-linemen. This is why you usually got to – maybe they give them a practice squad. I don't know. Like, that's a great point, dude. I don't know about that. Maybe they offset it with the wide receiver position or another position that they know they can get in the transfer portal that year after year they can be kind of insert here players. That's a great point about that, Bobby. I never thought about that, about the development of line play with this whole thing. Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about – I mean, I'm not trying to be rude, but Texas taking 3, 4, 5 offensive linemen, one might play out of that group because that's just – they're not ready physically. So, I mean, you add 2 years together, and all of a sudden you're down to 75 scholarships really quick. But look, we'll see. How many commits, though, CJ, will Texas have when football season starts? They're 11 right now. You think they'll get up to 18, 19 before August?
Yeah, I think that's a fair number. I was expecting prior to the Coleman brothers committing that number to double by the end of July. When we get to the August, you know, football season, 18, 19, I don't think 20 is too far out. We've seen Texas in the last couple of cycles get to that number and just use the football season to add maybe a late flip or, you know, a kid that wants to wait it all the way out to a signing day to commit. But we're seeing, you know, the average time for kids to commit move earlier and earlier because of these official visits in the summer. I expect a lot of these guys to get movement in their recruitments. When you talk about a DeCorin Moore, Jamie French, some of these guys already scheduling, you know, a July timeline at the moment.
All right, we got time for a couple more questions. Before we do that, though, I want to say thank you to our sponsor, Joe Brown, your veteran mortgage professional. Joe's been providing mortgages in Austin and around Texas for more than 3 decades. They can also do loans across the United States through Southside Bank. Joe's a proud Navy veteran, Armed Forces veteran, and a devout Longhorn fan, has 2 degrees from UT and has helped a lot of different UT athletes out through the years, as well as UT students and graduates like myself. Give them a call, 512-663-4744. If you're looking for a mortgage, that's 512-663-4744. Joe Brown is your veteran mortgage professional. All right, let's go to Damon Graham here. He has a question for us that I think is a good one. What position will most likely commit in the next 2 weeks? Which position will most likely commit in the next 2 weeks? Not wide receiver. How about that? That feels like it's still – they're waiting for the official visits. Running back,
Bobby,
is done.
Bobby, likely we see a quarterback in 26?
Yes, that could be a possibility.
Yeah. Looking at 25.
Who are the guys coming in this weekend, CJ? There's a few recruits they have coming in this week, right?
Yes. 6 guys coming in for official visits. 2 really, really talented kids from California. That's Caleb Edwards, the tight end, and Josiah Sharma, the big-time Folsom defensive tackle. We believe at On Texas Football, that's down to Texas and Alabama, with Washington fighting for a spot there as well. Javion Hilson currently committed to Florida State. And a lot of talented – a couple – really talented cornerbacks, Dorian Brew and Caleb Chester out of the Houston area, as well as Michael Terry out of San Antonio, Alamo Heights. So those are the 6 coming in this weekend. And boy, does it get busy quick in the month of June for the staff. They don't really have much time off with I know that they don't have their hands on the team per se, but with the ball starting back up, you know, with summer conditioning and now camps, you know, June 1st, June 8th, June 13th, and, of course, official visits all the way through. These guys are going to be working out in the summer heat, that's for sure.
All right, here's a question for you guys. A hypothetical from Joe. Dia Bell and Troy Huhn both choose UT regardless of the other. Is Bell more ahead and Huhn could benefit an extra year to develop? I don't think that's the case. As a true quarterback, I think Huhn may be more ready from that standpoint. Bell may be more athletic and maybe have higher upside. That would be
I'm a big fan of Troy Huhn. I'm with you, Bobby. I'm a big fan of Troy Huhn. I'm with you. I think he's still very new to the quarterback position too. He mentioned that whenever he visited in April, he's like, I haven't really always been a quarterback. You know, around 8th grade is when I really started to take this serious. And so you're still figuring out who he is as a quarterback. It's still new to him per se. I know he's played a couple seasons now, but we saw those offers come quickly because once that tape got out from this past season, schools really kind of understood it. This is a good talent. What's interesting to me for Dia Bell, and Rod, you've mentioned this in the past, but having that basketball background and having just kind of the ability to understand how to get the ball to people, you know, that's something I put a lot of value and stock in his recruitment and his quarterback development is, he looks to get the ball out. You know, some quarterbacks in the pocket collapses, they say, all right, how many yards can I get up the field? Can I get down? No. He extends plays to make the throw down the field, which I find very encouraging in terms of where his game will go. So there's different traits about both guys right now. I like Troy Hume in terms of where he is if I needed a quarterback tomorrow. But I do think there's an untapped ceiling in Diabelle's game where down the road you might see a guy that, you know, is warranted of a five-star, you know, rating that he has at the moment.
I will say this, though. I do wonder in Sark, Sark is evolving as a coach. We've watched him, right, real time, evolve as a coach the last 3 years. He's becoming a better coach. And I do wonder if his evaluation of quarterbacks is evolving a little bit. You know, certain defensive coordinators like Dan Quinn, certain defensive coordinators like Jim Knowles is one of them, too, at Ohio State now, was once at Oklahoma State. So he faced Sark, too. And Sark knows Dan Quinn really well. They kind of believe in the chaos factor that – offenses are built on precision timing. They're built on, you know, execution. So chaos is bad for them. They, you know, everything is built on precision at the timing of the hand placement and the route depth and all this kind of stuff. So just create chaos. And Dan Quinn does it at the NFL level as well as anybody. Jim Knowles would do it really well too. You want anything that disrupts timing, right? Bump and run coverage on the outside, twists and stunts up front on the defensive line, pre-snap movement with the safeties, different things, right? And both of those guys, by the way, they use three safeties. Dan Quinn uses three safeties in the league. Jim knows three. Why? Well, because three safeties just is a different presentation. There are not natural three high beaters. Now, these are different. Dan Quinn uses three safeties, but not three high. Jim Knowles uses a three-high defense. Very different. We don't have time to get into it. My point is this. I wonder if Sark now is embracing that there are defensive coordinators out there more and more who also embrace the chaos factor. They don't necessarily know what the result's going to be, but they know chaos basically is going to be more advantageous to them than it will be to the offense. Like, I don't know what's going to happen when I – do twists and stunts, and I blitz, and I play bumping on the outside, pre-snap motions, and if I move my safeties around pre-snap, they don't really know what the result's going to be, but I know the quarterback will be confused. I know I confuse the blocking schemes, throw off the timing of the routes on the outside, throw off the depth of the routes, therefore create chaos. And if you create chaos, you need an agent of chaos every now and then, and some quarterbacks are more comfortable with that than others. Quarterbacks like Troy Hune are not. Quarterbacks like Mac Jones are not. There are others like a Bryce Young that are. There are others like, I think, a Diabelle that are. And I think Sark maybe now wants a quarterback that, and I think Arch actually is more comfortable in chaos than Quinn. Quinn's not comfortable in chaos. Quinn is not an agent of chaos. Him scrambling was the best kind of, for him, that was the best antidote that he's got to deal with the chaos around him. He's like, now I'm just going to scramble when the fit is to Shan, which is good. But in the league, that's not going to get you where you need to be. You just need a quarterback that can handle it, either extending the play, getting deep into your progressions by doing that, getting outside the pocket, extending the play, whatever you want to do. But every quarterback does it a different way. And I think maybe Sark now, that's a part of his quarterback evaluation potentially. And maybe that's why Diabelle, just from what we can see, maybe that's why Sark is maybe higher on Diabelle than Troy Hume.
That was a really good breakdown. I like
stuff. Good stuff, Rod. I want to mention that somebody mentioned in the chat that Texas had hired a new women's golf coach. They have indeed. Laura Iannello, the former women's golf coach at Arizona, has been hired to replace Ryan Murphy, who was not retained or left the program less than a week ago. Laura Iannello won in her 2018 team at Arizona, won the NCAA championship. She is coming, and I can confirm that via text right now. So she is the next women's golf coach at the University of Texas. Congratulations to her. All right, another super chat here from Slick Rick. SEC, watch out. Sark is woken, a sleeping giant. Texas now the cool school to go to, and it shows in recruiting. Thank you for all you do, Bobby, Rod, and CJ. Thank you, Slick Rick, for all you guys do helping support us on this show, whether it's on the show, on the website, at On Texas Football, or what have you. We appreciate you guys very, very much. CJ, I want to close with you, if you don't mind. Yesterday, and Jerry and I talked about this a little bit. Yesterday, it felt like the worm kind of turned finally about Texas getting more guys, really elite young players on campus who had been the previous couple of years or almost previous 5 years going to A&M instead during this time period. I know that people aren't going to want to hear that, but when you and I talked on Friday, we said, how many scholarships are for Saturday, the Saturday conversation? How many scholarships do we think they'll dole out on Saturday? I asked you, you said 3 to 5.
Yeah.
And you did that based on history. So you weren't wrong based on what you'd seen previously. They offered 15 yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
That gives you an idea. And we know Sark is already fairly selective. He just doesn't throw them out there. Like, I mean, there have been some coaches in the past that did. The question I have for you is, did you finally see this? You've been covering recruiting now 5 or 6 years. Is this the first time you've seen where Texas had the majority of elite young players on campus for their elite camp compared to other teams in the state?
Yes, and I say this because it was Texas's staff, right? It was only Texas's staff at their elite camp. A&M had an elite camp on campus as well. And then you look at TCU and all of the coaches going in for the mega camp. There were probably 60, 70 schools in attendance at all levels, D1, D2, JUCO. That camp every year, 500, 600 kids in attendance to get offers, and many of them do, right? That's the purpose of the camp, is to go show out, get your get some face time in front of some of these coaches and leave with offers. Some of the best kids in the state of Texas for 26, 27, out-of-state kids coming in to throw, to catch, to block, to run and test in front of the Texas staff specifically. It gives you an idea of how they're now perceived on a national level. Again, getting John Turntine to come out here, a five-star guy with every offer in the country, and compete, because he said, I just wanted to come out and show these coaches that I can come out and be a competitor. That speaks volumes to me. And it has changed in the last couple of years because, again, Texas has tried to get a number of guys on campus for these big camps early on, and it just maybe not have had the success. Coming off of a playoff appearance, moving into the SEC, everything's moving in the right direction for the Texas football program, and you're really starting to see it in the younger ages. You know, we've talked about it in the past. You know, kids maybe about 3 or 4 years ago might not have, you know, truly experienced why Texas was kind of heralded as such a, you know, top program, right? You know, they just didn't grow up seeing the success on the field. That's flipped around a little bit. And when you talk about having momentum, capitalizing on it is the most important part. And they're doing so with these 26 and 27 kids, offering them. And that's the other thing I wanted to hit on real quick, and I'll make this one quick. But each kid was, when they were offered, they were brought away off the field, position coach said, hey, go up there, go see Steve Sarkisian. He's got a message for you. They made it very intimate, and it was a really cool feeling to hear these guys describe how the process of being offered by Steve Sarkisian and the Texas staff went down. They make it memorable, which means something. I remember Steve Sarkisian a few times in the fall has taken kids out to midfield before kickoffs and saying, hey, you can play here because you're going to be receiving a scholarship offer from me. And that means something, and I think it goes to show that they're turning over, you know, all the small rocks. They're not letting anything go unnoticed and making sure that it counts for each memory for these kids on campus.
All right, that's going to do it for tonight. Got a couple of notes to go over. Bert Auburn goes on scholarship. We saw a video of that earlier in this this show. Laura Iannello is the new UT golf coach. Women's softball off to the semifinals on Monday. Men's baseball, not so good. Lose 10-1, they're out. David Pierce and his job security may be in question at this point, the baseball coach at Texas. And then also women's rowing wins the national championship for the Longhorns over the Stanford Cardinal, helping Longhorns gain some traction there in the Director's Cup standings for sure. And then also 15 scholarship offers go out over the weekend to football players around the country, majority of whom in the state of Texas. All right, thanks to not only Rod Babers and CJ Vogel, but also our producer, Matt Hutchison. Thanks for super chats from Slick Rick, Justin Yarbrough, Ryan Nelson, Robert Pope, and Jason Hablinski as well. Thanks to all you and everyone out there hanging out with us this Sunday evening. For Rod and CJ and Matt, y'all have a good one. Thanks also to our sponsor, Joe Brown. Hook 'em, guys.
Hook 'em.